in flamboyantly vibrant animation. A knife stabs into a surface. The outline of a body appears, along with the title Ruthless People. A wrecking ball shatters it.
Greedy forever and ever. Success. Greedy and ever so clever. A mess. Giving the right arm to creep into paradise. They leave them black men St. Peter. The Enterprise. Stand up. Get on your feet. Ruthless people. Greed and evil. Oh yeah. You can have it if you want it. It might take the rest of your
A tornado sends a restaurant called Cafe Ruthless crashing down on several bystanders, and a hand beckons us inside. In live action, a pudgy, balding man shares a table with a glamorous red-haired woman.
Carol, did I ever tell you why I married her?
Yes, Sam. You told me many, many...
Her father was very, very rich and very, very sick. The doctors assured me he'd be dead any minute. There wasn't a second to lose. I rushed right out and married the boss's daughter. He was so sick, it was like the angel of death was sitting in the room with him, watching the clock.
Sam holds Carol's hands.
They pulled a plug on him. He wheezed and shook for about an hour. And then he stabilized. That son of a bitch just got older and sicker. And old, and sicker, and older, and sicker.
More coffee, sir?
No.
The waiter leaves them.
I couldn't wait around any longer. I went out and made my own fortune. The old fart hung in there for 15 years. Finally died of natural causes. I want the rest of that money. His money, her money, it's my money. I had to live with that squealing, corpulent little toad all these years. God, I hate that woman. I hate the way she licks stamps. I hate her furniture. And I hate that little sound she makes when she sleeps. And that filthy little shitbag dog of hers, Muffy.
Aren't you scared?
Scared? Hell no. I'm looking forward to it. My only regret, Carol, is that the plan isn't more violent.
Don't you consider throwing a body off a cliff in the dead of night violent?
Nah, she'll be unconscious, knocked out from the chloroform. I'm talking about hands-on involvement.
Hands-on?
Carol reaches her manicured, bejeweled hand under the table. Carol flashes a crinkle-nosed smile.
I'm going now. I can't wait.
Sam drops cash on the table, gives Carol a kiss, and heads off. The long-lashed lady gazes after him.
Good luck.
She flirtatiously works her jaw. Outside, a modern red roadster mimicking the body style of luxury cars of the 1920s passes through an automated gate. At the wheel, Sam drives toward a two-story stucco mansion and parks beside a fountain ringed with flowering plants. His hand opens the wood-paneled glove box, revealing a bottle of chloroform. Its black, red, and white label bears a skull and crossbones. Sam scoops up the bottle in a folded cloth and gets out of the roadster. As he prowls toward the house, he uncaps the bottle.
Barbara, dear, I have something for you.
Sam enters a sleek hall decorated with two zigzagged tower lights and large motley canvases.
Barbara! Where are you, dearest? I have something for you.
Trees grow in an adjacent foyer bedecked with geometric furniture.
Honey?
Sam steps past a sculptural glass table on a yellow and black rug. More trees and plants fill out the space, which features a fireplace curtained by falling water.
Barbara!
Deeper inside, plate glass windows offer a wide view of lush hills and a city skyline. A black grand piano contrasts with a white sofa and primary colored armchairs. Chloroform in hand, Sam backtracks to a raised dining area.
Dumpling!
He peeks into a bedroom, then strides in fully, passing two twin-sized beds and a black and turquoise makeup vanity that's built to look slanted. Sam walks by an elevated fireplace and a large TV set.
Barbara!
Sam frowns.
No notes, no messages. This is not like you, you meticulous bitch. It's just like that woman to screw this up. Damn it!
Sam marches into a study where brass lamps and fixtures highlight a traditional mahogany desk. A white toy poodle catches his eye.
What are you doing here? Mining the carpet with little poodle bombs?
He goes after it.
Take a whiff of this little...
Sam chases the dog outside. It escapes across the lawn past an abstract table and chair set. Sam halts and hurls the chloroform bottle after the dog.
Hairy rat.
In the living room, daylight spills across two black cushioned armchairs, upholstered also in the colors of ketchup and mustard. Sam plods down a few steps into the room and sits in one of the boxy chairs. He lets his weight slump back to rest awkwardly on the stair-stepped cushions.
Hello.
Mr. Stone, listen very carefully. We have kidnapped your wife. We have no qualms about killing and will do so at the slightest provocation. Do you understand?
Who the hell is this? Is this some kind of a joke?
I have no patience for stupid questions, Mr. Stone, and I don't like repeating myself. Do you understand?
All right. I'm sorry. Please continue.
You are to obtain a new black American Tourister briefcase, model number 8104. Do you understand?
Yes.
In it, you will place $500,000 in unmarked, non-sequentially numbered $100 bills. Do you understand?
Sure.
Monday morning at 11 a.m., you will proceed with case in hand to Hope Street Plaza and wait for a phone to ring. You will receive further instructions then. Do you understand?
Yes, I do.
You will be watched at all phases of execution. If anyone is with you, or if any action is not carried out to our complete satisfaction, it will be considered an infraction of the rules, and your wife will be killed. Do you understand?
I believe so.
If you notify the police, your wife will be killed. If you notify the media, she will be killed. If you deviate from our instructions in any way whatsoever, she will be killed. Do you understand?
Perfectly.
A police car parks outside the mansion as neighbors gather by an officer on guard.
5 minutes ago, Mr. Stone received a call from a man demanding a ransom for his wife, Barbara.
A news van and more police cars fill the mansion driveway. In a dirt alley, a view through a vehicle's windshield swerves left, then right, and bumps through a wooden gate. Pulling up behind a plain, tiny house, the weather-beaten van parks. A pretty blonde woman exits from the passenger side. A tall man in blue jeans joins her and opens a side door to reveal a squirming, tied-off sack the size of a person. The man gets kicked. The blonde woman winces as Kenny gawks. Together, the young pair lift their bagged captive out of the van.
Grab her legs!
A pair of high heels jut out from the bag's cinched end. The man and woman enter the house, struggling to keep hold of their thrashing captive. They cross the house's tiny kitchen to a tinier hallway where Kenny flicks a light switch. As his wife starts down the basement stairs, they both lose hold of the bag. The hostage tumbles heavily to the bottom. Kenny hustles down, followed by his wife.
Do you think she's dead?
Kenny leans in. The high heels give him a sharp kick to the jaw, sending him backward into a stack of pots. As the hostage rolls sideways, Kenny straddles her to pin her down. Barbara's arms punch through the burlap and take Kenny by the throat. As his wife winces at the commotion, Barbara, still in the bag, rolls Kenny onto his back. Kenny's wife grabs a broom handle. Bleeding at the nose, Kenny manages to force Barbara's wrists to the floor. Now he feeds a padlock through a chain's links, latches it, and gives it an appraising tug. He and his wife each wear cartoony duck masks atop their heads. They swap a look, cover their faces with the masks, and cross the pink-painted basement. Barbara is bound to a chair, her head covered. She jerks about in her lavishly avant-garde clothes. Kenny pulls the pillowcase off her head, revealing a blindfold and gag. He removes the gag.
You fuck with the wrong person! My husband does business with the mafia! When they track you down, you, your entire family, everyone you ever knew, will all get chainsaw enemas! And that's not all!
He removes her blindfold.
Oh my God! I've been abducted by Huey and Dewey!
Her duck-masked captors trade glances.
Jesus Christ! It smells like a toilet in here!
It's just cleaned this place all up.
We scrubbed down here for hours, down on our hands and knees, for God's sake.
My husband worships the ground I walk on! When he hears about this, he will explode!
Sam pops a bottle of champagne, seated on the edge of a marble bathtub.
Bye-bye, Barbara.
A news anchor reports on TV.
In local news, a kidnapping today in Bel Air. Police there tell us this woman, Barbara Stone, the wife of clothing tycoon Sam Stone, was abducted.
A stunned Kenny watches.
The couple's estate on Bellagio Drive. Preliminary sources indicated that Mr. Stone was contacted late this afternoon and that a ransom demand has been made. Police officials
kill Mrs. Stone if his demands were not met within 48 hours.
It's on every goddamn channel.
Millionaire heiress Barbara Stone has been kidnapped from her Bel Air mansion.
Kenny turns off the TV.
What'd you do, hire a publicist?
I feel terrible. Do you feel as guilty as I do?
Guilty? Are you kidding? He takes our money, steals your idea, goes out and makes $1 million, and you feel guilty?
Kenny's wife looks meekly at him as he strides out of the kitchen.
I can't believe it. How many times have we been over this?
Oh, honey, not again.
Let me remind
He shows a magazine with Sam on the cover.
You are the spandex miniskirt king. Not him. He is the spandex miniskirt thief. He's the one who should feel guilty.
He opens it to an article.
Look at this. Do you remember this? You cried for a week when you saw this. Look at the smile on that asshole.
I know he stole it, but she really didn't do anything.
She was his partner. Oh, damn it, Sandy. Do you enjoy getting stepped on? Do you? Because I don't. And I don't feel guilty. Take it back. I do feel guilty. I feel very guilty. I trusted a sleazeball like Sam Stone with our life savings on a handshake deal and then sat there and watched him take it all away from us.
Kenny notices a spider on the floor and gently scoops it onto the magazine.
That's over. You know better now. From now on, we trust no one. To hell with everybody else. We've got to be ruthless. Think ruthless.
What if I can't think ruthless?
You've got to. It's good for you. It makes you strong. I mean, what the hell's the sense of being a decent person when nobody else is?
Kenny sets it free on the patio.
Let's be assholes and get rich.
He ducks inside, then returns to the patio and stomps the spot where he left it. He goes back inside. Elsewhere, a mirror reflects Carol's face.
Oh, I'm crazy about you, you big girl.
She faces a man with frosted hair.
Something today.
Yeah, it just doesn't get any better than this.
He puts aside a hand vac.
I'm gonna take a quick shower. Can you be ready by the time I get out?
Ready?
Carol eyes him.
You're getting ready for Sam. The video equipment, remember? Tonight's the night.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Now, do you remember where I told you to go?
Yeah. The old deserted bridge near the Hollywood sign.
That's right. You wait for him there. He'll be in some rented car. He's afraid of getting blood on his sports car. Get in as close as you can. It's important you get a good shot of his face. If we can't recognize him, we can't blackmail him. You get that videotape of Sam finishing off his wife, and that man will give us anything we want for the rest of his life.
Yeah, then we're off to Haiti.
Not Haiti, Tahiti.
Her coiffed partner looks back at her.
I knew that.
The passports came today.
The man checks his ID. His name, Earl James Mott, shows beside a photo of his face, making a dopey half-smile.
Cool.
At dusk, an unmarked sedan parks by Sam's Roadster in front of the mansion. A pot-bellied detective in a tie approaches another wearing a U.S. flag lapel pin.
Frank, glad you're here.
What have we got?
We found a chloroform-soaked handkerchief stuffed away down in the garbage, and a tire print on the lawn, a good one. I'm having the lab check it out. And we found a few drops of blood in the kitchen.
Where's Mr. Stone?
He's upstairs. He seems pretty upset.
In the bedroom, Sam dances as he holds a glass of champagne.
Yes?
Mr. Stone, Lieutenant Bender and Walters are here. They'd like to start as soon as possible.
I'll be right there.
Sitting at Barbara's vanity, Sam tamps his fingers on a bar of soap and pokes himself in both eyes. Wincing a little, he squeezes some drops into each eye, then practices making sorrowful expressions. He adds a few more drops. Elsewhere, L.A.'s city lights sprawl beneath a glowing orange sky. Among the shrubs and brush on an overlook, Earl stands, waiting behind a tripod and video camera. Wearing sunglasses, he checks his wristwatch and folds his arms. Something off to his right catches his eye. As a pair of headlights approach on a hillside road, Earl swivels the camera to follow the car's movements. The boxy sedan crosses a narrow stone bridge adorned with old-world-style lanterns. As it arrives at the end closest to Earl, the fat male driver puts the car into park and smiles at his passenger, a young brunette in a flashy top and earrings.
I like to hear a woman make a lot of sound.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll scream my head off if you want to, honey. It's your money.
Yeah, my wife just lays there like a gunny sack.
As the red record light flickers on the video camera, a gawking Earl leans to the viewfinder. The black and white camera display shows the pair.
She isn't dead yet.
She's gonna kill her right here.
Earl's face contorts in horror and he looks away. As one of the woman's legs dangles out the open window, Earl grits his teeth and looks again. Earl plugs his ears. The woman's upper body juts out the open window, looking like a ship's prow as her arms hold the roof behind her. The man draws her back into the car. Earl keeps his ears covered and his eyes shut. He queasily covers his mouth, then doubles over. In the mansion, Sam sits with the lieutenants.
I have no enemies, at least none that I know of. I'm a businessman. I manufacture women's sportswear.
A boyish cop grins.
I think I've heard of you. Don't they call you the Spandex King?
The Spandex Miniskirt King. Probably read one of the articles.
Yeah, it was all his idea. Spandex miniskirts.
Was there anybody here today when you came home? Servants, maids?
It's the maid's day off.
Did you notice anything out of the ordinary when you came
home? The pot-bellied detective touches a rug, then his tongue.
What time did you come home?
It's the dog. She isn't properly house-trained.
The interrogating detective looks away from his hapless partner, who still holds up his fingers.
No, it's sweet.
The dog's a little diabetic.
I think it's wine or...
Oh, I know what that must be. I closed a very important business deal this morning, and when I came home, I opened a bottle of champagne, and as I was walking through the house celebrating, I called to Barbara to come and share the moment with me. She never came. Those monsters!
Sam covers his eyes as his sobs bounce his shoulders. As the interrogating detective looks to his sympathetic partner, Sam peeks at them. Elsewhere, Carol opens her front door.
Earl!
It was horrible.
Carol gives him a hug.
She wasn't drugged or anything.
What happened?
She screamed and screamed. God, it took forever. It must have lasted 2 minutes. He kept stopping and starting. She'd be at the brink of death, and he'd stop and let her catch her breath, and then he'd start into her again. And she'd scream louder and louder. Then, when she finally died, he looked so satisfied, I thought he was going to light up a cigarette afterwards. Son of a bitch enjoyed it.
Sam's just been on TV claiming she was kidnapped.
She wasn't kidnapped. He killed her. I saw it.
Honey, I know. It's just an alibi. He just said that to throw the police off his trail.
You're gonna watch that right now?
I think I should.
Baby, you don't want to see it. It'll make you sick.
I think I can take it.
Oh, no.
Ooh, I can't watch this.
She turns it off, straightens in her fiery red dress, and answers the door.
He actually went through with it.
She checks the peephole. Sam shows a bottle of champagne. Carol warns Earl, who holds a hairdryer against one ear and covers another.
Sam here! Go ahead now! Sam's here!
She slams the bathroom door shut, then answers the front door. Sam hugs and twirls her.
Ta-da! Zippity-doo-da! Zippity-yay! My, oh my, what a wonderful day!
Watching you on TV.
You saw it, huh?
Good performance, Sam.
What a story. Barbara Stone kidnapped. I couldn't have made up anything better. It's brilliant. And the press loves it.
Well, that's very clever, Sam.
He grabs two glasses.
It's inspired. Imagine someone demanding money from me to keep Barbara alive. Unbelievable, idiots. Come on, let's have a drink. I can't stay long. I've got to get back and look sad.
Are you sure the police believed you?
They ate it up. I fed them a banquet of bullshit. I threw them off by miles. All I have to do now is just sit back and do nothing. Except, of course, I have to show up at the fictitious ransom drop.
You made up your own ransom drop?
Naturally. I got news for you. That woman ain't coming back.
I know.
Carol eyes him uneasily as he opens the champagne.
Did you have any trouble?
No, I'm telling you, I enjoyed it. I'm having fun.
The foaming beverage spurts out.
Clean the rug, honey. Oh, for you, my cupcake. To the kidnapper.
As Sam hugs her close by the neck and sips, Carol gawks. She lets out a breath, her glass of bubbly undrunk.
To the future, Mrs. Sam Stone.
They both drink.
Whoops. I gotta run. I'm sorry, honey. I was hoping we'd have time for a little poke in the whiskers.
What a shame.
I'll take a rain check and a few of these bonbons. Zippity-doo-dah.
He clicks his heels. Sam leaves. In the pink basement, Barbara turns on a small TV, which shows pro wrestling. Her ankles change, she leaps through a magazine and sits back on a twin-sized bed. It drops a little. Barbara stands and checks the foot of the bed. She's able to drop the padlocked loop to the floor and easily lifts the bed leg, freeing the length of chain completely. She stands upright, her eyes thoughtful. Upstairs, Sandy steps past a bookshelf and undoes a small apron around her waist. She joins Kenny on the couch, where he lies on his back with his arms folded on his chest.
You okay?
As she regards him timidly, he opens his arms to her. Sandy tips down upon him, and they share a deep and tender embrace. The basement door opens. Barbara emerges, slack-jawed, her messy red hair in a puffy wad above her black and gold headband. As she creeps into the open, Kenny spots her.
She's out!
Help! Help!
Get the chloroform!
Barbara grabs a phone.
Somebody help me!
As Kenny seizes her, Barbara yanks his hair and kicks him in the knee.
Get me the police! I've been kidnapped!
Kenny aims a gun.
How the hell do I know where I am?
Barbara's tense expression hardens and she hangs up.
Good. Now be quiet and don't move.
Sandy arrives with the chloroform.
Nice faces. Nice, easily identifiable faces.
Kenny and Sandy trade the gun and chloroform.
Spout! Ah! I can't do this anymore!
A startled Sandy drops the gun. As Kenny grabs it, Barbara throws a coffee mug at his face.
God, that hurts!
Kenny dabs at his nose with the chemical-soaked cloth. Oh. Realizing his mistake, he gawks, totters woozily, and squints his eyes. Barbara's eyes follow his wandering aim of the gun. She seizes his hand and bites his wrist. He drops the gun, which lands squarely on Barbara's foot. She grabs the gun and takes aim at him, holding her foot. As a bleary-eyed Kenny moves in, she pulls the trigger. The gun produces a small flame. Barbara pitches the gun, reaches over, and takes aim with an electric mixer. She repeatedly juts it at Kenny's face. Barbara slips on her ankle chain. As Kenny straddles her, pressing the soaked cloth over her mouth and nose, Barbara reaches her grip up between his legs. Barbara's eyes slowly close, and Kenny falls slack on top of her, his face relieved. Outside, a car passes the police station at night. Above the station's modest lit sign, a pair of upper-story windows glow softly. Inside, a balding investigator in a white lab coat flips open a binder, revealing a visual index of automobile tires. With a magnifying glass, he examines the varying treads and compares them to a photo of the imprint left behind on Sam's estate. He dials on a touch-tone phone.
This is Sergeant Blake at the lab. I'd like a purchase search on Uniroyal Model NXP. That's right, for all of LA County.
Daytime. Barbara reads a newspaper as she sits on the bed in the pink basement.
Police are now at the scene of a brutal murder in Englewood.
Her paper and the TV show the same facial sketch.
By the bedroom killer. Police investigators are asking anyone who may have seen this man to contact them.
Barbara rubs a perfume sample card on her neck.
Police have also issued a warning that this man is extremely dangerous and citizens should not attempt to apprehend him. This is actually
Barbara Channel serves.
I'm Rick Durais.
Away it goes. Trying to be nice. Money verified good.
Six, keep going. Steady, nice and tall. Come on, now knees up and reach. Get those heels down and pull those abdominals in. Pull them in, suck them up.
Bobbing a foot to the music, she leaps through a fashion magazine and settles on a page showing three glamorous, slender models. Barbara envisions her own face on one of them and smiles. The model's body quickly grows short and fat.
Come on, if you're still on that couch eating that donut, put it down and get up.
Barbara's smile turns to a disgusted sneer. Then she frowns sadly at the aerobics instructor on TV.
Come on, reach.
With a dubious smirk, Barbara gets off the bed and removes her avant-garde vest. She scoots her chains to an open space with her foot.
Come on, get those pepperoni thighs nice and high and reach.
Barbara runs in place.
A little higher, squeeze those buns. Remember, if you don't, no one else will.
Barbara kicks like a drum majorette, then flops into a chair.
And don't forget to breathe.
Upstairs.
What if he doesn't show?
Well, then you get the keeper.
Kenny slugs the rest of his coffee and sets the mug and a plate in the kitchen sink. He and Sandy share a tender look and hug.
Everything's gonna work.
Wearing a uniform and apron, Sandy kisses her husband.
I'll call you.
Sandy nods and they both smile. Then Kenny crosses to the back door. He gives her a parting look.
Sandy, he's gonna show. It's his wife.
Outside, a shopping mall sprawls behind the Tail Pup, a hot dog stand built to look like a giant bun with a frankfurter sticking out one end. Kenny uses a payphone in front of it.
Where are you, Sam?
Downtown, by a huge sculpture of red arches, a payphone goes unanswered. Kenny checks his watch.
You son of a bitch.
At the mansion...
Let me turn your transmitter on.
The potbelly detective faces Sam.
No, it looks fine.
Mr. Stone? Telephone.
The detectives and officers on site watch as Sam takes the phone from the boyish officer.
Hello?
Mr. Stone, we had a meeting.
Hang on, will you, Harry? I have some friends here. Why don't you call me on my office line, 555-7583, right? Business associate.
Kenny reaches in his pocket for change.
555-7583. 555-7583.
Sam enters his study.
Hello?
Mr. Stone, why have you failed to appear at the designated destination?
I just couldn't make it.
The cops are there, aren't they?
That's right. The cops are here. Reporters, too.
All right, Mr. Stone. I'm a reasonable man. I'm going to give you one more chance. We will reschedule our rendezvous for Wednesday. Do you understand?
You're rescheduling?
Yes, I am.
So she's still alive?
She's in perfect health.
In our previous discussion, you mentioned that you would kill my wife if procedure wasn't followed accurately.
That's correct.
And that still goes?
Definitely.
Barbara's poodle enters the study.
What method would you use? How would you kill her?
A bullet through the head at close range.
That would do it. No question.
As the dog sniffs the chair's leg, Sam reaches for a gun.
Well, you've got me convinced. Until Wednesday.
Until Wednesday, then.
Sam takes aim at the dog.
Muffy, you've taken your last piss on my rug.
Muffy lifts a leg.
Tell Mr. Stone it's time to leave for the ransom drop. I hope he's not...
The detectives gawk.
Oh, my God.
Muffy runs out. The police hurry into the study.
Just went off.
Lieutenants Bender and Walter swap a look. Elsewhere, they stand watch atop the Hollywood and Western building, dwarfed by two sculpted reliefs of long-bearded men. One floor down, a decrepit sign reads, Samuel Ace, Private Investigator. At street level, an undercover cop works under the hood of a parked car. He peers off to another, dressed up as a vagrant by a dumpster. Two more posing as payphone repairmen and a woman in gaudy clothing all wear earpieces. A disguised cop on an old mattress gets a visual on Sam, who mills about by a payphone. Bender checks his watch as Walters uses binoculars.
Better give him a call.
The rooftop affords a direct view of Sam pacing in front of a seedy Mexican restaurant. Bender dials on a chunky portable phone. In his suit and tie, Sam eyes the nearby payphone, sidesteps awkwardly toward it, and picks it up.
Hello?
This is Bender. He's been over an hour and he hasn't shown up.
They haven't come by now. I don't think they're gonna show. Why don't you go on home? We'll send an unmarked car to follow you.
Sam sulks.
All right.
Sam hangs up, reaches for a black briefcase at his feet, and starts off. An assailant grabs him by the shoulder.
Give me all your money, Jack. Come on, before I kill you.
The detectives take notice.
Come on.
Sam offers the briefcase.
Here you go. Give me your wallet. Come on, before I stick this right through your back.
Sam complies with a smirk.
You owe my wallet.
You owe your jewelry, your watch, your rings, everything.
Jewelry, watch. You want my underwear too, you piece of shit? Here.
The undercover officers surround the mugger with their guns ready.
Yeah, this time he's got some neighborhood watch.
The thief frowns. In the pink basement, Sandy comes downstairs.
I brought you some more magazines.
More magazines? How long do you plan on keeping me down here?
Well, as soon as Mr. Stone pays the ransom. It should be Monday.
Good. I'd hate to miss my doctor's appointment.
Doctor's appointment? Why? Do you need medication?
Get a urine injection.
You get urine injected? Why?
It promotes weight loss.
Does it work?
Yeah, it works.
Barbara irritably tears a page off of a notepad and hands it to Sandy.
Lancome throat and firming massage cream, sperm whale oil, royal queen bee jelly. I can't get you these things. We can't afford it.
That's not my problem. It's yours. Supply these things and I will tell the jury you acted humanely. It might make the difference between life and the chair.
Barbara trembles theatrically in her seat and grimaces. As Sandy timidly backs away, Barbara casually stops the charade.
Or the gas chamber.
Barbara widens her eyes and clutches her throat.
Sometimes, if it's a firing squad, they miss all the major arteries. Bang! And you don't die right away. You kind of just hang on. Bleeding!
As Barbara dramatically slumps to the floor, Sandy retreats upstairs. Barbara smiles from ear to ear. Elsewhere, two half-inch videotapes rest on a table.
Now, I want you to mail this from across town. I don't want him seeing a postmark from my neighborhood.
Earl hands Carol a label.
You're good at this.
We can't be too careful with Sam. He's a very suspicious man. Got to see him one more time.
You do?
If I don't see him on his birthday, he'll be very, very suspicious. He'll be expecting his usual present.
Inside Kenny and Sandy's house.
It's been horrible. No matter what I do or as nice as I can be, she just tears into me. She hates me.
Sandy, you're her kidnapper. She's supposed to hate you.
Sandy lifts a well-set dinner tray.
I'll take it.
Okay.
Just ignore her.
Hey-ya!
In the basement, Barbara pelts Kenny with a broom, a paint can, and a lamp. Kenny shields himself with the tray and spills the entire meal.
No dinner for you, then.
Aw, oh, gee whiz, that really hurts. I'm a real aficionado of death camp cuisine.
Look.
Kenny bends over to pick up the mess.
As long as you're here, why don't you just pretend to be a guest?
Nice butt.
Kenny straightens.
That's what they'll say.
Beg your pardon?
Nice butt. That's what they'll say on your first day in the men's club.
Men's club?
The San Quentin Country Club. With a cute little rear end like that, you'll be the belle of the ball. Your dance card will be filled every day. You'll be so popular, making all kinds of new, close friends. Big, ugly, hairy friends. Not that you'll ever see what they look like, because you'll be facing the other way.
Kenny gawks at Barbara, who beams at him.
You're very good at this. You should write children's books.
As he leaves her, her grin turns into a sneer. At the Stone estate, Muffy bites onto Sam's pant leg. He hops on one foot. In his downtown office, he makes a call.
Yes, you're attack dogs. Do they just attack people, or can you get them to attack little dogs?
Sam frowns, his hand propped on the yellow pages.
Oh. Well, what if you starve them for a while?
His brow furrows in puzzled disappointment.
Oh. All right, thank you. Yeah.
Miss Farnsworth to see you.
Send her in.
An ad includes a doodle of Muffy and an attack dog's jaws.
Happy birthday, Sam.
Carol shuts the door behind her and prowls to his desk in a full-length fur coat.
I brought you your present.
Sam eyes her from the bottom up.
Oh, yeah? Where is it?
She takes off the fur, revealing a satin and lace outfit.
Here it is, Sam. Does it meet with your satisfaction? Is there anything else you desire?
Sam frowns up at her.
How about a big dog? Can you get one?
A big dog?
Yeah, like a Great Dane or a Mastiff. How big does a shepherd get?
Sam, as sexually provocative as I like to think I am.
I'm not asking you to screw the dog, Carol. It's for me.
Carol stares hard at Sam. Outside, a storefront window reads Crazy Bob's. Inside, a huge stereo speaker is marked Dominator.
See, that's what I've got. The Dominator X1. It's the best speaker they carry.
Yeah, it's really pretty.
Can I help you?
Hi.
Hi.
Katie's here to get a stereo, and I'm here to see to it that she doesn't get ripped off. Know what I mean?
Don't worry. I'm not like the others. How much did you want to spend?
$800.
$500.
Okay, I think I have an idea what to show you. Let's start with speakers. Over here, we have a great speaker. The Century EV1. Consumer Stereo has just rated this a best buy. I have a pair of these myself.
Yeah, what do you think of this one?
The Dominator X1.
The gold chain wearing man winks at his girlfriend.
Well, the Dominator's a good marketing idea, but it's really not a good speaker. We give it a 500% markup, so we sell it at 50% off, give the customer the illusion he's getting a deal, and we still make a bundle.
But it's so big and impressive.
Size means very little. Bigger is not necessarily better. I sound like Dr. Ruth.
As Kenny chuckles, the male customer rolls his eyes.
You mean the Dominators like a...
Well, the Dominators are very popular with men who like to have bigger...
Equipment?
Exactly.
The male customer averts his gaze, playing nonchalant.
All right, let's try this one.
In the pink basement...
Knees are bent down, hips tucked under. We're gonna work on the waist. We're gonna loosen
Barbara
it up,
stops munching a piece of toast and rolls her eyes. Wearing a form-fitting bodysuit, she stands in front of the TV and mirrors the instructor's movements.
And right, this time hold it over to the left. Reach as far as you can.
Barbara concentrates, reaching both her arms far to her right.
And then very slowly twist through the...
Barbara stands with one foot forward and one back.
Leg up and
as the instructor balances perfectly, Barbara falls.
It feel good?
In the mansion, a large, sleek Doberman accompanies Sam down the entry hallway.
Muffy! Oh, Muffy!
Muffy runs into view and halts on the foyer rug.
Muffy, meet Adolf. Adolf, eat Muffy!
Adolf, more than three times Muffy's size, bolts after her.
Bon appetit, Adolf.
Sam crosses to a table in the foyer and sifts through some mail.
Junk, garbage.
He takes a prolonged look at a 9x12 padded envelope.
What do we got here?
Sam heads up the spiral stairs, then enters the master bedroom with a half-inch videotape in hand. He shuts the door behind him, steps past the room's ultra-geometric furnishings, and inserts the cassette into a VCR. Sam hits play and turns on the TV. He slumps into a nearby chair and watches the recording. The woman leans out of the car window. Sam sits up, frowning, then double-checks the padded envelope's contents. He retrieves a handwritten note.
I thought you might find this interesting. An anonymous friend.
More!
In Carol's house, the redhead and Earl relax in bed. Carol answers the phone.
Hello.
Carol, I got your tape.
What are you talking about?
The tape, the videotape.
What makes you think it was me?
Who else would send me something like this?
It's Sam. He's on to us.
How the hell did you get this, Carol?
A friend of mine took it.
It's terrific. I know why you sent me this tape, honey. And you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna do the same damn thing with you. And you two can scream your brains out because no one's gonna hear. You are gonna be begging me for mercy, whimpering. Oh, here she goes again. Listen to this. This is my favorite part.
Carol lowers the receiver and Earl covers his ears. Carol quickly hangs up.
He's gonna kill me. He's gonna torture me and kill me. I can't stay here. I'm gonna have to stay.
Carol resignedly gazes upward.
At your place.
Cars stream along a sunny highway. The view scans past a distant American flag and descends into a shabby trailer park where spindly TV antennas jut from the roofs. One trailer has a large awning that shades a surfboard and some tiki torches. Inside, Earl smiles as Carol queasily holds up a car part by a wire.
Don't worry, honey. Stay here as long as you want.
Seated by a lava lamp, Carol drops the part.
Oh, shoot.
Earl eyes his aquarium.
Crack it in tubs. They're float.
I can't just sit here and wait for him to track me down and kill me. We've got to get Sam put in jail.
Earl sadly discards his fish.
I want you to make another copy of that tape, and this one's for the police.
Earl half smiles. Downtown, Kenny uses a payphone. As he waits, he shifts impatiently on his feet and puts a hand on his hip. The downtown phone he's calling goes unanswered. Kenny irritably hangs up. As Barbara does sit-ups in the basement, Kenny visits her.
So, I guess it's just a matter of time before you're caught, right, honey bun?
Kenny takes a seat on the foot of the stairs.
Barbara, I want to ask you a personal question. You and Mr. Stone, did you get along?
Barbara stops exercising and looks at him. Upstairs, Sandy sketches a gown that features sharp geometry and colors.
So, what did she say?
She just insulted me.
Kenny clunks into a dining room chair near his wife.
I don't think he loves her.
Well, let's face it, she's not Mother Teresa. Gandhi would have strangled her.
What are we gonna do, Kenny? I'm tired of being scared all the time every day. I can't take this anymore.
I know he's bluffing. I just know it. I've got to be really tough with him.
At the Stone Estate.
Never let the seller know you're hot to trot.
The boyish cop smiles.
Tell him you haven't got the money. Hello? Debbie?
Yeah, Debbie's here. Who's this? Well, Ralph, Debbie can't talk right now. My dick's in her mouth. How about if I have her call you back when I'm done? I love wrong numbers. Anyway, tell him you don't have the money, that it's all tied up in investments or some crap. Hang on. A bad salesman will automatically drop his price. Bad salesmen make me sick. Hello.
Mr. Stone, do you love your wife?
Hang on. Would you excuse me for a moment, please?
Oh, sure, Mr. Stone.
The boyish officer leaves Sam's study.
Go ahead.
Mr. Stone, you love your wife, don't you?
Sure, I love my wife.
Mr. Stone, we demand a satisfactory explanation why you haven't shown with the money.
Look, pal, you're asking a lot of cash. I haven't got that kind of money laying around the house. It's all tied up in investments, so I'm sorry.
Sorry? What do you mean, sorry?
No can do.
What?
No deal. You have to take your business elsewhere.
What?
No cashola.
What about, Les?
You make me sick. Make me an offer.
Bring $50,000 in unmarked bills to the same phone at noon on Thursday.
Thursday? Tomorrow's Thursday. You mean tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow. Bring $50,000 tomorrow.
And if I don't?
And the next time you see your wife, pal, I'll be in the morgue.
Kenny angrily hangs up. Sam crosses his fingers and gazes skyward. At a table and chairs resembling circuitry, Sam has breakfast.
Mr. Stone, I have bad news. We think we've found your wife.
We'll need you to come with us to identify the body.
As Sam bows his head and covers his eyes, a distant policeman plays tennis on a court behind him. In an examination room, a sheet on a table bears the contours of a body. A coroner, Sam, and the two lead detectives gather around the shrouded cadaver. Sam gives a nod. At his cue, the coroner lifts back the white sheet. Sam regards the examiner plainly.
It's not her.
A man lies on the table.
There must be some mistake. We want the woman who was brought in this morning.
Oh, Jane Doe, 56. She's in the next room.
In the adjacent room, the coroner opens a 2-foot by 2-foot steel door for cold storage and slides out the body of a woman with short brown hair.
It looks like her. A lot like her. But it's not her.
Sam pounds down his fists, then quickly smiles at the detectives.
My Barbara! She's alive!
Sam hugs Lieutenant Bender. In the pink basement, Barbara wears her black bodysuit as she does modified pull-ups from a broom handle that's propped horizontally between two high-backed chairs. She puckers her lips with each breath, then lets herself drop to the floor to rest. Hanging from the ceiling like a bat, she does crunches. Next, she pedals on a regular bicycle she's made stationary. The rear tire stays raised off the floor by means of paint cans stacked ingeniously under the axle's outer ends. Her bushy red hair sways as she stares ahead with a manic, wide-eyed expression. Next, with her legs threaded through the basement stairs, she does steep-angled sit-ups. With her bodysuit now fitting her slimmer figure, she uses her chains as a jump rope. Next, with each hand gripping two paint cans, Barbara works out her deltoids by doing sideward lifts. A head-on view of her efforts shows her knees apart. Barbara bares her teeth with each powerful exertion. As the TV shows a man and woman slowly touching the same elbow to the opposite knee, Barbara does quick reps in alternation. Later, a stately wooden door reads Henry Benton, Chief of Police. The video plays on a color TV. Chief Benton gapes wide-eyed at himself in the video. He covers his eyes. He turns off the TV and answers his intercom.
Yes?
Sir, there's someone on the phone. They say they sent you that tape.
The doughy-faced chief gulps.
Put him through, please.
Hello?
Hello. Is this Chief Benton?
Yes.
I'm the one who sent you the tape. Have you had a look at it yet?
Yes. I just saw it.
So what do you think?
Well, obviously, it's very upsetting. This whole thing's making me ill. Oh,
I agree. That poor woman, she had to go through a living hell. I'd rather die a quick death.
All right, all right. What do you want from me?
Well, arresting Sam Stone would be a good start.
You want me to arrest Sam Stone? Any special reason why I should arrest him?
For murdering his wife.
Murder? Well, all right, okay. But you know, it's not going to be easy. I'll need evidence.
That tape isn't enough to convince you? Jesus. Think of the publicity you'll get.
All right, all right. I'm convinced. I'll have Sam Stone arrested.
Thank you.
Chief Benton hangs up. Benton sneers.
Sam Stone?
Benton parks in front of the Stone mansion and gets out of his car. The chief checks his watch, hoists his pants by his belt, and marches toward the house. The boyish policeman greets him.
Chief Benton.
The investigation has taken a new direction. We have reason to believe Stone may have murdered his wife.
Mr. Stone? Oh, no.
You heard me. I want this place combed until something is found. Got it?
Yes, sir.
The boyish officer finds Muffy on a hillside.
Muffy! There you are. Where have you been, huh? Girl. Oh, yeah, that big dog won't hurt you, huh? Just a big...
As he pets Muffy, his gaze catches on something. He spots the bottle of chloroform nestled against a rock and retrieves it. In the house, Chief Benton sneaks into Sam's study and reaches into his suit coat's inside pocket. Using a handkerchief, he produces a small bottle and places it in one of the desk drawers. The label reads cyanide poison. Benton shuts the drawer.
Chief Benton!
What is it?
I found this in the backyard. Chloroform. And Officer Williams found snapshots of Mr. Stone with another woman.
The chief's eyes light up.
Really?
Elsewhere, the lab analyst uses a magnifying glass to compare a tire tread photo marked Stone with another tread photo marked Kessler. The man smiles to himself and reaches for the phone.
Jackpot.
Outside Crazy Bob's, a pedestrian and some cars pass the colorful storefront. As Kenny works in the back room, a co-worker arrives and points Lieutenants Bender and Walters in his direction.
Mr. Kessler? Ken Kessler?
Yes.
We're police officers. I'm Lieutenant Bender. This is Lieutenant Walters. May we have a word with you, please?
Oh, sure. Come upstairs. We can talk in the salesman's office.
He smiles warmly. As he turns his back to lead the way, the smile sours to a wide-eyed stare. Nearing the stairs, Kenny shows the two detectives a pleasant grin and heads up.
Have a seat.
Thank you. Mr. Kessler, over a week ago, a lady named Barbara Stone was kidnapped from her Bel Air home. Are you familiar with the case?
Yeah, I read about it.
We believe the vehicle that the kidnappers used left a tire print in her driveway. We took a mold of that print, had our lab analyze it, and the results were rather interesting.
These are the prints of the kidnapper's car, and these are the prints of your car.
Walters turns off his pager.
Is there a phone I can use? Sure, it's right over there on the desk.
Walters eyes him as he steps aside. Kenny glances at Bender, then smiles as he studies the photos.
Amazing similarity. Would you excuse me for a second? I've got to go to the bathroom. I've got a touch of the stomach flu.
Bender watches Kenny stand up.
Sure, go right ahead.
Chloroform? What about fingerprints? Bingo. We have a winner.
In the bathroom, Kenny tips a waste can upside down like a stool by an open window.
You won't believe this. They found evidence implicating Stone.
Stone? You're kidding.
Chloroform and fingerprints.
I'll be damned. Let's get out of here.
Where's Kessler?
In the John.
Kenny breaks some glass as he squeezes out the window. The officers arrive at the door.
Oh. Stomach flu. Mr. Kessler?
I'll be right out.
Don't bother, sir. Listen, thank you for your help. We'll just show ourselves out.
Oh. Oh.
Bender pityingly shakes his head. As Kenny hangs from the open window, the detectives exit the building through a back door and fail to notice Kenny dangling above them. Now safely on the ground, Kenny digs into his jeans pocket and enters a phone booth.
Hello.
All right, Mr. Stone. We came very close to killing your wife. But she begged us repeatedly for just one more chance. So in the spirit of compassion and mercy, we decided not to kill her just yet.
Compassion and mercy? What the hell's going on over there? I thought you people were ruthless.
We are, Mr. Stone.
But then what's this phone call about?
We called to make you an offer. An offer even you can't refuse.
Oh?
Yeah. 10,000.
Fat chance.
Mr. Stone, this is no joke. We're desperate people. And
I believe this is a joke, pal, and you're it. The last time we spoke, you said my wife would be in the morgue if I didn't pay. Well, I didn't pay, and today I was at the morgue, and she wasn't there. You lied to me. You know what I think of you?
No.
You got no nuts. What do I have to do? Put a gun in your hand, aim, and pull your finger down, you spineless wimp? I dare you to kill her!
Sam hangs up.
Now that ought to do it.
Back at Crazy Bob's, a teenager in a leather jacket gets Kenny's attention.
Hey, you. You want to sell me a stereo?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll sell you a stereo.
All right. I'm looking for something real hot. I don't want to get ripped off, you know what I mean?
Okay. You're looking for some real hot speakers, right? I'm not talking about something you just listen to. I'm talking about the kind of sound you can feel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to great stereo, you can't beat big speakers. I'm talking about big speakers with big woofers. Like this. You could get this. It has a nice little 8-inch woofer, or this 10-inch. Over here, we have a nice big 12-inch. But I can tell by the look on your face, man, you want something even bigger.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah, that's right. We gotta go to the big room for this.
Kenny opens a door.
The big room! Check it out, my man. The flagship of the entire Dominator line, the MX-10. I have a pair of these myself. 30 inches of thigh slapping, blood pumping, nuclear brain damage. Bitch!
They're as big as a wardrobe.
Dude, what's it fucking cost?
That's the bitchin' part about it. It don't matter. If you can't afford it, fucking finance it!
Kenny hits a switch. Red lights on the speaker's strobe flickering on the teenager's grinning face. Chewing gum, he plays air guitar and trades a look with Kenny, who joins in. The teen gawks and takes deep, enthralled breaths as he looks from Kenny to the speakers.
So what if it's as big as a Subaru and costs as much? You'll never have to trade this in! This is gonna be with you for the rest of your life! And when you die, they can bury you in it!
I want it!
Kenny's grin fades as a young pregnant woman joins them. The young father-to-be addresses the woman.
This guy is okay. First guy I feel like I can really trust.
Wait a minute. Why don't I show you something else? They're not very big, but consumer stereo rates them a best buy. The Century EV1s, and they're not gonna break you.
In the pink basement, an aerobics instructor on TV does hand-to-ankle kicks, and Barbara skillfully keeps up.
That's it! I'm pooped. Hey, let's take a break.
Take a break! Come on, you little whip. Let's go!
Deep breath in. She kicks the TV off, then does elevated push-ups on the foot of the bed.
Oh, here's your lunch.
Sandy sets down the tray.
It's fruit salad. You seem to like that the most, although you still don't eat as much as you should.
My body's become a more efficient machine. I go farther with less food.
Well, you must be in pretty good shape by now. You certainly look good.
Sandy steps away.
You've lost a lot of weight.
Barbara stops exercising.
Huh? What?
Oh, yeah, you've lost a lot of weight. At least 20 pounds.
What? Do you have a scale?
Barbara's feet and some chain links now rest on a scale whose dial reads 118.
I don't know how to thank you.
Thank me?
I've been to 10 different fat
in the last, God, I don't know how many years, and I lost a total of 6 pounds. I have lost 20 pounds!
Barbara checks herself with a makeup mirror the size of a bread plate.
I wasn't sure, but it felt thin. You wouldn't have a...
Barbara waves her hand.
Never mind.
Oh, what?
No, it's very silly.
Oh, you know what? Please tell me.
Oh, all my life I wanted to have a slinky little figure, you know, so I could wear some Bill Blass or Valentino, you know, some exotic full-length evening gown like Christian Dior, Jimmy Galanos.
Are you kidding me? You're kidding me, aren't you?
I'm sorry. I know it's ridiculous to think somebody of your... Well, moderate means.
I'll be right back. Just don't go anywhere, okay?
Sandy races upstairs. As Barbara resumes checking her physique, she cutely sticks out her behind. Downtown, two policemen enter Sam's office.
Sam Stone?
Yeah?
Mr. Stone, you're under arrest.
For mixing cotton with silk?
As they cuff him, Barbara marvels at her reflection in a full-length mirror. She models a chic, wide-shouldered gown of tinted silk.
This is absolutely beautiful. Whose design is this? Is this Bill Blass? Is this Albert Nippon?
Nah, too conventional.
Halston, I know who did it. Oscar de la Renta. I designed it.
Get out of here! Really?
Wow. You're a professional.
Nah.
You are, honey. This is sensational. You have any more? Oh, wait!
Barbara begs with a gesture to keep the mirror, and Sandy races upstairs. Facing the mirror, Barbara puckers her lips and strikes glamorous poses. Hands on her hips, she bounces in place, then minces forward, grinning from ear to ear.
Foxy lady.
She pretends to pour herself a shot, downs it, and tosses the imaginary glass. The basement is soon full of different gowns as the ladies chat, each dressed up and coiffed.
So Sam told you I was his partner? No way! He was just passing the buck. Oh, God. So, when do I get out of here?
Well, as soon as Mr. Stone pays the ransom.
Well, what's the problem? What is the ransom?
Barbara brushes on lipstick.
It was $500,000.
That shouldn't be a problem.
He complained.
He complained?
And then we dropped our price to $50,000.
Yeah?
He didn't pay. He didn't pay?
Barbara glowers, sorrowfully gritting her jaw.
So now what?
So now we're dropping our price again to $10,000.
Do I understand this correctly? I'm being marked down? What is this, the bargain basement?
Sandy's eyes well up, followed by Barbara's.
I've been kidnapped!
Sandy hands over some tissues, then blows her nose. In a holding cell, Sam paces behind bars.
Check it out.
As one inmate points, a second hulking man pinches Sam's cheek.
You sure got a pretty mouth.
Sam recoils.
All right, Stone, let's go.
Hey, is this something I said?
Sam stands before a judge.
Although this is a capital crime, the accused is an upstanding member of the community, a responsible and successful businessman, and has never before posed a threat to society. Bail will be granted and set at $700,000.
Sam goes bug-eyed.
You want to try for a reduction?
No, pay the ticket and let's get the hell out of here. That filthy slug, that screeching little witch, that pasty-faced troll.
The judge?
My wife. I gotta get her back.
At the Kessler house, Kenny enters through the front door.
Sandy?
Kenny?
Sandy wraps her arms around him.
It's over. Sam wasn't gonna pay the ransom. He couldn't care less. I'm no criminal. I can't even sell retail. And that's legal. Come on, we gotta get packing and get out of here.
Oh, Kenny. I've got some very interesting news for you.
Kenny grabs a suitcase.
I'm the new rising star in high fashion.
Sandy, let's get a grip on ourselves. Let's try to be calm. We're going down to Mexico for a couple years. We can camp on the beach.
Does that mean we let Barbara go?
We're not gonna take her with us.
Good, because I've already let her go.
What? You let her go?
As Sandy happily nods, Kenny sprints out of the bedroom.
Oh, my God! You didn't let her just run right out of here, did you?
Yeah!
Oh, my God!
Why not?
Now she knows where we live. She'll turn us in. The police will be here any minute.
No, Ken, you don't understand. She really likes us now. Ken, I showed her my gowns. She loves them. We're all going into business together. We're going to open our fall line in Paris.
She told you this?
Yes, she really, truly loves me. She can be trusted. She's changed.
Changed? What'd you do? Perform an exorcism?
Ken, she lost nearly 20 pounds.
Kenny gapes at her.
Well, you just had to be there. It was a very special moment.
As Kenny's eyes widen, Sandy gawks, her expression panicked.
I'm surprised they knocked.
Kenny heads out of the room while Sandy fumbles at a window. An officer at the door shows Kenny a flyer of the bedroom killer's facial sketch.
Good afternoon. We're wondering if you've seen this man. He was sighted in the area a few weeks ago and then again this morning. He's psychotic, extremely dangerous, and extremely violent. He's killed half a dozen people.
Oh, no! Oh, no! I gotta get out of here!
My wife, she's late for work.
The officer frowns.
Doesn't look familiar.
Kenny accepts a flyer.
Well, keep this and give us a call at this number in case you do see him. And under no circumstances should you try to subdue him yourself. Like I said, he's extremely violent.
He looks it. Thank you very much, officer.
The policeman leaves. Kenny finds Sandy outside, scaling their backyard gate.
Sandy!
He runs over to her.
It's okay, it's okay! They're looking for somebody else.
As Sandy climbs down off the gate, the view roves to the outer alley where the bedroom killer gets out of a parked car and turns a dagger in his grip. The grave-faced murderer scans the area, then fixes his gaze in the direction of the Kessler residence. Inside, Kenny and Sandy hurriedly pack.
I'll get the other suitcase from the basement.
As he leaves Sandy, the kitchen door opens. The killer slowly enters the house, his knife held in reverse up along the inside of his wrist. He closes the door. With a hawk-eyed expression, he treads deeper inside. He unblinkingly peers to his left, then slashes with his knife to the right. Finding no one there, he keeps advancing. Barbara enters the house through the front door.
Hello? Hello?
She and the intruder spot each other.
Anybody home?
She grins at the stranger.
Oh, hello. Are you a friend of Ken and Sandy's?
His confused eyes shift, then he stares at Barbara.
You look like my mother.
The man raises the knife.
I hate my mother.
Barbara gawks, her face terrified, as she sidesteps toward the hall and backs away from the angry, prowling man. From the bedroom, Sandy overhears the killer stalking after Barbara. Kenny emerges from the basement and freezes inches in front of him.
You look just like my father. I hate my father.
The killer lunges, Kenny evades, and the man tumbles down the basement stairs.
What the hell was that?
Kenny props up the man's body.
Oh, honey, don't touch him!
Barbara opens a newspaper.
Oh, my God.
What?
It's the bedroom killer. Ew. He told me I look like his mother. He hates his mother.
Barbara puts an ear to the killer's chest.
He's dead. So, if I look like his mother and you look like his father, this is what our son would look like.
As the killer lies motionless, a baffled Kenny gawks.
Pretty strong argument for birth control.
Oh, my God, what do we do now?
Barbara, what are you doing here?
Barbara shows Kenny a newspaper headline. Kidnapping a hoax. Husband has mistress. One accompanying photo shows an apprehended Sam scowling. A second shows him snuggling with Carol.
I got it, I tell you, I got it. Listen to this. All right, Sam arrives on a motorcycle. Wearing shorts, no shoes, no shirt, nothing. Maybe we'll just put him in a jock strap, all right? Then we send him all over town for 4 or 5 hours in the middle of a hot, sunny day. Sam burns real easily. He'll be bright red in no time.
I can't believe this is happening.
Then he's got to cover himself with honey and go to a bee farm. Then we make him dance all around so the bees go absolutely nuts.
I don't think she will.
Then we all watch while they sting him to death. Yeah!
Barbara, don't we want something that'll last? A punishment that'll keep stinging him the rest of his life?
My God, he must have been seeing this woman for years. Castrate him! I want to castrate him!
She makes a snipping motion.
Wouldn't it be better if we struck at the core of Sam's being, his reason for living?
But what would that be?
His testicles.
Would you know in complete detail what Sam's total net worth would be? Not just the big stuff, the little stuff too, down to the last penny.
Yeah, I think so.
Barbara pulls a stray hair off her tongue.
I want you to write it down in as much detail as you can. Fire up the stove, get the tofu burgers from the freezer. We're calling Sam.
Sandy and Barbara swap excited grins. At night, Sam pulls up to the mansion in his roadster. Opening the door, he slumps despondently out of the car. His tie hangs loosened from his unbuttoned collar as he plods toward the house. In the entry hallway, Sam pouts and pockets his keys as he passes between Barbara's zigzagged tower lamps. In the foyer, Muffy and Adolph trot up to him, carrying torn garments in their teeth.
My tux. My silk tux. Et tu, Adolph? Et tu?
The dogs scamper away from him with the clothes. Sam hustles to the living room phone.
Hello?
Hi, Sam.
Thank God it's you. Listen, I've been thinking about your last offer, and I think you're right. I cannot refuse. $10,000 is fair and totally acceptable.
She's in bad shape, Sam. We've been torturing her.
Sandy presses a frying burger with a spatula, and Barbara adds the screaming.
Torture! Don't kill her! Don't kill her!
We found out your wife is worth quite a bit more than $10,000.
What do you mean?
We changed our minds. We've upped the ransom.
Barbara grins.
To what?
We're up to $2 million.
$2 million? Are you out of your fucking mind? Where'd you get an incredible figure like that?
Oh, you'd be surprised at the quality and quantity of information a lit cigarette can provide.
Ah! What else?
Gems! He's got rare gems in the safe! Oh, Sam, forgive me!
What kind of gems? How many?
I don't know!
As Sandy gets carried away making the sizzle, Barbara stops her.
4 flawless 1-carat diamonds!
Sam scowls.
The bitch blabbed.
Apparently, you got $1.2 million built up in equity on Sam's sportswear. Another $350,000 in your pension plan. General Dynamics closed at 75¾ today, which brings another $175,000 to the party. $45,000 for the Excalibur, and now there's the 4 1-carat diamonds in the safe.
You inhuman slime!
Barbara makes the okay sign.
After his release yesterday afternoon, Mr. Stone continued to deny the charges, despite what the district attorney's office insists is overwhelming evidence.
Carol and Earl watch.
Overwhelming evidence is right. What more do they want? How could they let him go?
Carol places a call and Chief Benton answers.
Hello?
Hello, it's me again. I see Sam Stone's been released.
It's not easy keeping a man in jail with these liberal courts. A man is innocent until proven guilty.
Well, how do you think these courts would feel if I gave that tape to the media?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they'd go crazy for it. They love to show sick stuff like that. It'd probably be on national TV 24 hours a day for weeks. I bet that'd get a hell of a reaction.
Please, please, don't do that. Where's your sense of compassion? Why do you have to be so vicious?
Vicious? Have you seen that tape?
Come on. What's the big deal? It's just a lonely man who wanted a little excitement. That kind of thing happens every day. Everybody does it.
I don't believe you said that.
Men get the urge. We're only human.
Sick.
Hello? No, don't hang up on me, please.
Earl faces Carol.
So what do you say?
Something strange is happening here. Either the chief is a complete moron, and complete morons are rare.
Carol takes a prolonged look at Earl, then blinks, collecting her thoughts.
Or he's playing games with me. We better find some place where we can look at that tape.
Carol and Earl enter a busy television store where numerous screens all show the same program.
This is perfect.
It is?
Give me the tape.
Carol inserts the cassette into a VCR. Yeah, I've got
10 minutes to the radio station. Ah, here's the problem.
Okay.
The video plays on every last screen in the store. Carol eyes Earl.
You idiot. This isn't Sam.
And he isn't killing
me. That's my husband.
Carol stares intensely.
Barbara really was kidnapped.
With the police.
She really was kidnapped. I didn't kill her. Please believe me. You gotta be there. They're coming this time for sure.
The detectives eat sandwiches.
I think the deli's using a different mustard. Last time it was 10 years more.
Jesus Christ, I'm pleading for my life, and you're discussing the inconsistency of lunch meat condiments. Haven't you heard a word I've said?
Lieutenant Bender picks up his submarine sandwich and showily takes a bite.
God!
Sam meets with a banker.
I'm sorry, Mr. Stone, but since the house is in your wife's name, as well as her other $15 million in assets, you're not legally entitled to it as long as your wife is alive. However, you've got $1.2 million built up in equity in your business, another $350,000 in your pension plan. You'd have no problem using that as collateral.
All right, let's do it.
A few feet away, Chief Benton removes cash from a briefcase and stows a passport in his breast pocket. At the mansion, Sam adds two last stacks of cash to a briefcase filled with money, then picks up a pistol.
Hello?
Sam?
Carol, where the hell have you been? I've called you 100 times.
Sam, I miss you. How have you been?
I'm going crazy over this kidnapping thing. And the cops won't do a damn thing to help me.
Why?
Because they don't believe me. They think I made up the kidnapping. They won't even show up at the ransom drop to see if I'm telling the truth.
You're gonna be all by yourself? That's terrible. How much money is it?
$2.2 million.
Cash?
Of course it's cash. Have you ever heard of a kidnapper taking a check?
Where are you going to give them the money? I mean, I hope it isn't dangerous.
Carol grabs a pen and paper.
I've got to go to a phone booth on Hope Street Plaza.
Downtown, during the daytime, L.A.'s high-rise buildings stretch up to an overcast sky. The view descends to the office tower plaza featuring the monumental steel sculpture of red arches. As numerous pedestrians pass in all directions, Sam paces with the briefcase in hand. Beside him, a low, curved wall of concrete supports 4 payphones. Sam glowers as he walks, does an about-face, and resumes pacing. Holding a glass of champagne, Barbara watches Sam from a hotel room high above.
Hello?
Sam, it's so nice to hear your voice. How's Muffy? Listen, Sam, we don't have much time. There's a gun pointed at my head, and they're making me give the ransom instructions in case the police are listening. They don't want to have any voice prints. You must make sure there are no police. Otherwise, they'll kill me.
No cops.
Now, have you got all the money? $2.2 million in unmarked, non-sequential bills? You miserable scum-sucking pig! Oh, honey, I'm so sorry. They made me say that.
Yeah, I got all the money.
And it's all there in the briefcase?
You scumbag! You lowlife motherfucker! Oh, dear. They made me say that, too.
It's in the case, yeah.
The Rolex, too? The gold Rolex?
Who said anything about the Rolex? They never mentioned the Rolex.
They want the Rolex and your pinky ring! Honey, they tortured me with cigars. I had to tell them everything.
Sam angrily opens the briefcase. He removes his gold watch and ring, slaps them down on top of the cash, and latches the briefcase shut.
All right, what else?
That's it. Just wait there.
A beat-up coupe parks by the sidewalk next to Sam, and Kenny gets out from the driver's side. Wearing sunglasses and a clown's wig and nose, he strides over to Sam with a bulky walkie-talkie in his grip.
Bag, please.
Sam frowns at him.
Come on, give me the bag!
As he hands it over, Kenny smiles. A police car halts nearby, and an officer takes aim.
Freeze!
A SWAT team aims from the bushes. Others take up positions by the plaza steel sculpture as more squad cars arrive on the scene. Bender and Walters observe from a rooftop.
Put the bag down and put your hands on your head.
Bender! They're from the government. They're here to help you.
I said no police. Do you know what this means?
The gunmen remain on alert.
Stay back! They touch me, and I give the order to kill! Got it?
He shows the walkie-talkie.
Leave me alone, or she's a dead woman! You want her blood on your hands?
What do you think?
Walters and Bender confer.
Let's just follow him home.
Okay, let him go.
What?
Sam makes a grab for the briefcase.
What are you doing? Come here. Let go! Back. Tell him to let go! If he doesn't let go, I give the order!
Go ahead, give the order.
Let go! She's a dead woman if he doesn't!
Sam draws his pistol.
All right.
Walters lowers his binoculars.
Drop it.
Sam looks Kenny up and down.
Punk.
Gripping the pistol and briefcase in one hand, Sam answers.
Hello.
He answers the wrong phone and angrily hangs up.
Hello.
This is Lieutenant Bender. What are you doing?
I'm taking my money. You got your man. The rest is your problem.
Mr. Stone, you may be guilty of obstructing justice, aiding and abetting a known felon, accomplice to kidnapping, and possibly murder. My advice to you is to drop the gun, give back the bag. We have 150 officers, 75 cars, and 2 helicopters. He won't get away.
Sam begrudgingly hangs up the phone. The balding tycoon holds the pistol up high, then drops it on the ground. Kenny kicks it aside and accepts the briefcase from him.
That's better.
Here.
Kenny faces the assembled police.
What are you doing here? Tell them to get out of here. If they don't go, she's dead.
All right, gentlemen. Clear the street, please. You too, Mr. Stone. Back away.
The policeman and SWAT team member stand down.
That's better.
As the squad cars leave the scene, Kenny glances towards Sam, who wears a sickly sneer on his face. A stubby compact car pulls in front of the beat-up coupe.
You can go now.
Now don't follow me! Understand?
We understand.
Earl gets out, unmasked, and takes aim at Kenny with a pistol.
Don't move! Who the hell are you?
What the hell is going on? I'm robbing you!
Earl takes the briefcase.
Stop him!
Did you shoot at me?
No, you moron. There's police all over the place. Hundreds of them.
Earl looks around.
Do I look that stupid?
Yes, you do.
Earl holds back tears, then composes himself.
If you shot at me, where's your gun?
Well, you're too sharp for me. You got me figured out. I don't have one.
Earl turns away. The gunshot punctures one of Earl's tires.
That is a brand new tire.
Kenny gawks at Earl.
Give me your keys.
Believe this.
Give the bag to Bozo, drop the gun, and put your hands in the air.
Bender lowers the megaphone as he and Walters look on.
Who said that?
Walters nods.
This could very well be the stupidest person on the face of the earth.
Earl takes aim at Kenny, who impatiently puts his hands on his hips.
Perhaps we should shoot him.
It's the police department.
Really?
No. With the National Rifle Association.
On the rooftop with Bender and Walters, a half dozen shooters take aim. As Earl drops the gun and briefcase and puts up his hands, Kenny grabs the money.
Christ.
Kenny gets into the coupe and Sam comes running as he pulls away. Earl remains on the sidewalk, hands in the air. Next, Bender, Walters, and Sam climb into an unmarked sedan. As Walters drives the car in pursuit, Kenny uses his walkie-talkie.
I'm leaving now. They said they wouldn't follow me.
Behind him, a half dozen cruisers follow. Kenny and his pursuers drive along a guard-railed overpass. The polished steel of a tanker truck reflects the passing squad cars. As Kenny maintains his lead, still wearing his clown getup, he checks his rearview mirror. Kenny parallels a highway, carefully observing the speed limit, and the police follow at the same pokey pace. As the pursuit passes through a quiet neighborhood, Kenny eyes the string of cars following, including the detective's car. An aerial view shows the long motorcade stopping at a traffic light. Later, as it follows a flat straightaway, a jumbo passenger jet coming in for a landing passes close above them. Farther along, the slow-moving chase passes a park of mown grass and healthy palm trees. Kenny uses his walkie-talkie.
They're still following me.
In the unmarked car, Bender listens in with his own handset.
You can't trust the police.
Kenny steers the beat-up coupe under a touristy archway that reads Santa Monica, Yacht Harbor, Sport Fishing, Boating, Cafes. The thoroughfare leads straight toward the ocean. The police cars keep following him.
Oh, God.
The roadway angles downward toward a pier.
He's cornered and he knows it.
I hope he doesn't hurt anybody.
Kenny speeds up a little and glances over his shoulder. His car zips past shops and sightseers. The entire string of police cars remains on course to intercept. As the cars follow the pier, passing over the ocean surf, a woman on a bench curiously lowers her glasses. Continuing past the pier attractions, Kenny radios in.
I'm not going to jail! I'm not going to jail!
Kenny plows through a barrier marked emergency vehicles only. A few people clear out of the way. Kenny rapidly approaches the end of the pier. Avoiding a small shed and several fishermen, Kenny bangs a hard right and drives off the pier. The car nose dives into the water, producing an enormous splash. As the car sinks, bystanders race to the edge of the pier for a look. The rear taillights and bumper disappear below the surface.
Somebody help! He'll drown!
Water's way too cold.
There's riptides out there.
I've seen sharks.
Cash floats to the surface.
Look there! That's money!
Yeah?
Several men and women jump into the water. As they swim after the bills, Sam hurriedly gets out of the detective's car.
My money!
Walters radios in.
Let's get the Coast Guard and fish him out.
As the swimmers fetch the floating cash, Sam pushes through the crowd.
You can't do that! That's not your money! That's my money! Stop him!
Sam pushes a police officer off the pier. A winch and cable lift the clown-costumed man from the water, his arms hanging limp at his sides. His dangling body rotates a little as Walters and a fellow officer help lay the body down on the pier. The detectives remove the disguise to reveal the wanted murderer.
The bedroom killer.
What about the money?
They recovered a few thousand dollars. The rest must have washed away.
She said if anything went wrong, they'd kill Barbara.
Sam shakes his head.
Things couldn't have gone more wrong than this, could they?
Bender and Walters swap a look.
That means she's dead.
Sam paces away from the authorities. As he nods vaguely to himself, Walters bows his head. Seen from behind, Sam raises his fists, then leans on the fence, shuddering vigorously. His happy grin remains hidden from the police. Nearby, on the other side of some crime scene tape, another patrol car arrives. An officer opens the door for Barbara, then lifts the police tape, allowing her to pass. She steps forward, healthy and well-dressed.
Mrs. Stone!
Oh, be damned. Mrs. Stone?
Yes?
I'm Lieutenant Walters. We're glad to see you're okay. I'm sorry to have to ask you to do this right now, but I'm afraid we need you to identify the body.
Bender peels back the sheet, unveiling the bedroom killer's lifeless face.
Yes, that's him. Oh, I could never forget that face. What hell he put me through.
You're sure he worked alone?
Oh, positive.
He mentioned having a partner.
He was schizophrenic. He thought he had partners. Where's Sam?
He's over there, Mrs. Stone.
Would you excuse me for a moment? I'd just like to be alone with my husband.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Sam stands smiling at the ocean.
Hello, Sam.
His smile transforms into wide-eyed shock, and he wheels around.
Barbara.
He looks her up and down.
You look terrific.
Think so?
Sam approaches, his expression incredulous.
You're so thin.
Really? Does it show?
She turns a circle in her cute outfit.
I mean, you're beautiful.
Barbara beams.
Oh, Sam.
Giving her a hug, Barbara. Sam rests a chin on her shoulder and makes a queasy, cross-eyed face.
Hope my marriage is as strong as theirs after 15 years.
Behind them, Barbara strangles, kicks, and punches
Sam.
Yeah,
we almost blew it. Thank God she's alive. You know what, buddy? You work, you put in the long hours, it's a tough beat. But it all seems worth it when you get a moment like this.
Yeah, I love a happy ending.
Barbara plants Sam face forward at the pier's edge and gives him a parting kick from behind, sending him into the water. Elsewhere, Kenny surfaces in some shallows wearing a regulator and diving mask. Sandy stands on the beach nearby, wringing her hands. As Kenny doffs his diving tank, Sandy spots him and grins brightly. She runs toward him, leaping for joy, and they wrap their arms around each other. Kenny spins her around. They share passionate kisses, their united forms silhouetted against the shining surf. They simultaneously look downward, then Sandy points, and they run in the same direction. Kenny grabs up the black briefcase, and they excitedly frolic hand in hand along the beach. Kenny holds up the briefcase triumphantly. The husband and wife peer back over their shoulders and see Barbara jubilantly running their way, high heels in hand. They unite in a brief three-way hug, then continue ahead together. Barbara reenacts her swift kick to Sam, and Sandy applauds. The image freezes on their rejoicing as credits roll.
You see her sitting with a coffee and a paper with her high-top sneakers of Italian design. The long, cool stare, she aggravates attention. Makes up a face while she makes up her mind. Now you're in trouble, maybe she's an intellectual. What if she figures out you're not very smart? Well, maybe she's a quiet type who's into heavy metal. All you got to get it settled, cause she's breaking your heart. Don't try to put on an act, you can't do that to modern woman. And you're an old-fashioned man, she understands the things you're doing. She's a modern professional. She's got a lot of confidence, it's easy to see. You wanna make a move, but you feel so inferior, cause under that exterior is someone who's free. She's got style, she's got her own money, so she's not another honey you can quickly disown. She's got the eyes to make you realize you won't be hypnotized by your usual charm. You got your plan of attack that won't attract the modern.
This production has been described by Deluxe with funding by Disney, voiced by Nicole Zanzarella.